So I was getting bored in 1995, and I couldn't stand the people in the White House and on Capitol Hill, and I thought I'd do a little detour. But as I started thinking about writing something about the American Revolution, I found myself drawn into what I thought of as the three previous emerging Republican majorities. As late as the American Civil War, a lot of people in Britain believed that the American democracy was a fluke, which happily could be destroyed if the Confederacy succeeded in breaking away. All three of these wars, the English Civil War, the American Revolution, and the American Civil War, were won by, either temporarily or in the longer framework or both, by the side that was Democratic with a small d and Republican with a small r and represented a more quote-unquote progressive version of history. But you also find that the side represented by the middle class one, the side that was urban, the side that represented more of the marketplace and less of the old way of doing things economically, and usually the side that was low church as opposed to high church. We have a party system which no longer draws on these wartime alignments. The party system we had when we were growing up was the Civil War party system. I think that we really don't have a party system now that has any strong basis in anything, but you have a lot of these cultural fights are lingering on, and politics doesn't handle them very well. The Britain of the 18th century was the melting pot, the Ellis Island of Protestant refugees from Europe. And those are the people that came to 17th and 18th century North America. We're facing right now in the Middle East, in the Caucasus, in Southeast Asia, in the Balkans, in many places, all of a sudden, front and center, religion, politics, and war. The Irish are no longer in the British Isles. The Scots are predominantly out of the British Isles, the Welsh a little less. It's the English who basically won in the British Isles, chased everybody else out. It's pretty clear that religion was part of the conflict that precipitated each of these wars. There is something to be said historically for wars. They clear the air. Looking back at civil wars within important countries, you see that it was after those civil wars the country was typically at its peak. You can posit the importance of history, but you don't seem to be able to make it really work to avoid old problems, because the old problem is human nature. Economics is a real thread. There's no doubt that each one of these wars was a success for those who urged a freer marketplace. Capitalism, which has its name in lights at the moment, is already running amok, and that it has always been brought to heel after the collapse of major speculative bubbles. I'm also starting to see in the religious constituencies the rise of a sense that the God of the alders can't survive the God of the marketplace. This whole worship of the market and capitalism is really running amok, and more in this country than anywhere else, and that if it's a bubble that busts, it's going to produce a major, major reaction politically. The tensions that are aroused by some of these cultural issues are the sort of things people have fought over before. And since we can't now, you sort of wonder how it's all going to be handled. And I think that's one of the real question marks about mature societies, and how do you keep the vitality when you don't have the combat? I'm really worried about the political system's ability to do much of anything, frankly. What I would be very pleased by, if I knew that somehow or other turnout in the next 2, 4, 6 years was going to climb by 12, 15, 18 percentage points. The God of the marketplace is the God that's in question, and the other gods are perhaps waiting in the wings.